Last year, the Georgian parliament withdrew proposed legislation targeting so-called foreign agents that was strikingly similar to such stifling legislation in Russia. If enacted, this law would have mandated that civil society and media organizations that receive funding from international sources register as agents of foreign influence. A wide range of groups would have fallen into this vague category, including election monitors, corruption watchdogs, and independent media. The draft law triggered widespread demonstrations in Georgia, as well as severe condemnation by human rights organizations and overseas partners, prompting the authorities to abandon the legislation. This podcast was recorded on March 29, 2024. At the time of recording, the Georgian bill had been withdrawn by lawmakers and was widely regarded as a success story of civil society successfully preventing the adoption of a draconian law. However, on April 3rd, the Georgian authorities reintroduced the widely unpopular law. The accelerating trend toward laws of this kind is not limited to Georgia. At the same time that Georgia's ruling party was advancing its law, legislation seemingly inspired by the Russian model was signed into law in Kyrgyzstan, and a foreign agent bill progressed in Slovakia's legislature. They join a wide range of governments who've weaponized legislation and narratives about foreign influence to target dissent and undermine political pluralism. At a time more generally of massive pressure on democracy and human rights around the world, for democracy watchdogs, such so-called foreign agent legislation represents another part of the authoritarian toolkit. To better understand this particular threat and the way that Georgian society has responded, let's turn now to the conversation I had with Civic Ideas' Tinatin Kidashelli. You're listening to the Power 3.0 podcast, examining authoritarian resurgence and democratic resilience in an era of globalization. Power 3.0 is brought to you by the International Forum for Democratic Studies, the Ideas Center at the National Endowment for Democracy. We talk with civic activists and experts from around the world on critical challenges, such as defending against information manipulation or fighting kleptocracy, as well as challenges on the horizon, such as the implications for democracy of emerging technologies. And I'm so pleased today to be joined by Tinatin, who serves as the chairperson for the Georgian think tank Civic Idea. From 2015 to 2016, she served as Georgia's Minister of Defense, the first woman to hold this position. Prior to this, she was also a member of the city council in Tbilisi. Over the course of her career, Tina has spearheaded many impressive initiatives to advance democracy, uphold human rights, and combat corruption in Georgia. So, Tinatin, before we get started in the discussion, I would really be keen to hear a little bit about your career path and what led you to the work you're focusing on these days, including countering foreign authoritarian influence. And more specifically, what brought you to Civic Idea and what aspect of your work you find most important for safeguarding democratic and human rights in your country?
Well, thank you once again for having me here. It's a pleasure to talk on this podcast. I have 30 years of work experience, almost from high school, basically, which was the time when Georgia was fighting for its independence from the Soviet Union. Being 16, 17 years old kids, we ended up on the streets on hunger strikes, on various demonstrations. And I think that that's the spirit or that's the experience that guides my entire life up until today. We fought 30 years ago exactly things that the Civic Idea is fighting for against now. The foreign influences, foreign at that time being the Soviet Union and the Soviet Communist Party. We were fighting against the dominance of censorship, dominance of all sorts of authoritarian methods that were repressing freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of association. We're not allowing people to have their own opinions, express those opinions, and live their own lives without the state interference. Georgia, as well as many other countries in the post-Soviet space, went up and down during these 30 years. There were waves of democratization. Then we were going back to semi-authoritarian modes, which we are at this moment right now. But every time somehow we've managed to encourage ourselves to go and fight again, not to lose even what we had. There is this common belief that because there's lots of suffering in those countries, there are lots of poverty, wars, ethnic conflicts, you know, all kinds of troubles of the world. People are desperate not to lose at least the freedoms that they fought for all these 30 years. When I stepped down from the ministry in 2016, and we were thinking together with my friends who left the ministry together with me, we were thinking of next page in our lives. Obviously, it was pretty clear that Russia having its illegitimate military force in Georgia, having 20% of the country under the occupation, was joining all the evils of the world in defeating every shred of freedom in that part of the world it considers as its own neighborhood or backyard. And we said, okay, let's continue exactly the same job we were doing at the Ministry of Defense. And this is how Civic Idea was born. And we've kind of prioritized the field of work, and it is still pretty clear that regardless of all the very practical, visible, tangible problems we are experiencing with Russia, that's not the only problem we have in the region. And the People's Republic of China comes as this next or already present strong hand trying to, particularly after the Russia's invasion to Ukraine, trying to fill all the gaps left by Russia, by weakened Russia. And I think that we made a right choice in 2016-17 already, when Civic Idea was established, to check, monitor, balance, speak out, warn, do our due diligence about all the activities of the People's Republic of China in Georgia and in a wider region of Black Sea.
And thank you very much for that. And we can come back maybe to talk a little bit about the particular challenge that China is posing to Georgia. But perhaps we can devote just a couple of minutes to the case of the foreign agents law that was proposed and then withdrawn just about a year ago. For our listeners, maybe you can say a word about how that law took shape and then how Georgian society reacted to it and where it stands now.
Yeah, it was exactly March last year when suddenly out of blue, Georgian government came up with this idea of foreign agents law, which was drafted, written exactly as you've said in your at the beginning of this podcast, in a very Russian way. Word by word, literally speaking, it was a copy, Georgian copy of the Russian law, like in old good times, you know, so during the Soviet Union, when there was a draft prepared at the Soviet Union in Moscow, and then all the republics were given blessing to just translate in their own languages, maybe add a couple of sentences here and there, but basically have exactly the same laws passed as Moscow was dictating. And it's exactly what happened last year. And obviously, the story was not long, actually, and it all happened very quickly, immediately, in a matter of hours, through Facebook. Well, Twitter is not that popular in Georgia, but all kinds of social media platforms, whatever people are using. Some people told me even TikTok. I don't know. I don't use it, but probably on TikTok as well. People started organizing themselves. They were like, oh, come on. Have you heard what the government just said? They've announced that they are closing even that space, which is still available for all of us, regardless of our party belonging, regardless of our loyalty to the government. The democratic world does not distinguish on that. So, and young people particularly were writing that, your sister who is in UCLA on the American scholarship on Fulbright or something, or your son who is in Brussels studying on Erasmus scholarship, it's all going to be gone. So people started generating the stories themselves, what this foreign agents law would bring to them. And then again, in a matter of hours, like the whole city was on the streets. And usually, this is how it works in Georgia, that if the capital city goes out on the streets, then every other city goes out on the streets. And then you had these huge demonstrations in every more or less important city in the country. It took 3 days for the government. Actually, government came very strong on it in the beginning. They were very demanding on the society to not to follow this propaganda spread by the NGOs and all the agents of various countries, and that it was in their own benefit. And they had these two main lines in their narrative. One, it was that all we are asking is the transparency of the non-governmental sector. And two was that it's exactly the same as the American FARA. So what's the problem? If Americans have it, European Union exactly at that time started discussion about its own legislation on the foreign malign activities. And they said if Brussels is talking about it, even Washington, they have it for decades. Then what's wrong with Georgia? All we are asking is a transparency. But it did not work because Georgians immediately labeled it as a Putin's law or Russian law. And everybody who was coming on the street, they were coming with their own slogans and the big papers just made at home saying that, oh, do you want to go back to Moscow? That's the way to go back to Moscow. So during those 3 days, lots of things happened. It was like the whole history was written during those 3 days, because a government that was saying that the initial draft law that they brought to parliament was equivalent to FARA and similar to FARA, and they've modeled FARA in their legislation, suddenly next day came up with second draft law. And in parliament, we had two drafts registered. And when they've initiated the second draft, they said that, okay, in the previous one, we have modified it a little bit, but now we just literally translated FARA. This is Georgian version of FARA. You don't want the first one? Let's get the second one, which is exactly like FARA. And of course, it became a big joke because everyone was like, okay, which one is FARA? Yesterday, you were saying exactly. So probably it's the same in all countries, but in Georgia, definitely it's like that. When the government sees hundreds of thousands of people on the streets, then they get completely lost and they start making mistakes. And that's what happened with my government. And then after the third night, when they understood that people were not giving up, everybody was staying regardless of a horrible weather we had. It was like raining like hell for all 3 days and was very cold. But kids were out all night. They were dancing. They were having parties on the main streets. It was amazing what was happening there. So they understood that no one is going back. And then they had only two options. Option one was to do what they did. And thanks God they did that and they withdrew the legislation. And the second option was to shoot. Of course, they could have shot the demonstrators. They did it 2 years before that. But they understood that that was not the time, and they had no legitimacy for attacking the demonstrators, and then they withdrew the law.
And my understanding is part of the larger story, you and your organization also came under a good deal of pressure relating to this. Maybe you can say a word about how that came about.
Yeah, the problem now, after a year, that we do not have a law, this is very funny, I always repeat saying it, we do not have foreign agents law in the country. It was never enacted, but government acts as if it is there. Everything that was written in this law is in action on a daily basis by attacking NGOs, calling us somebody's spies, somebody's agents, somebody's lobbyists of interests of different countries. They've invented words that do not even exist in Georgian, which will be in translation like people without homeland, we are people without religion. I mean, it's just unbelievable how much imagination is there about labeling us. And they have different stories for different people. So, for example, there was this big story in January that about a couple of other NGOs because they were sending their opinions and recommendations to the European Union about this tending of the electoral or judicial or other reforms that EU is asking from Georgia. And then governments suddenly started showing on media all these portions from those reports, obviously picked and chosen as they wanted, without the context, without the full understanding of what the paper was about. And of course, government was heavily criticized because there are no reforms that European Union is asking from us done by the government. And then labeling those guys as the ones who were fighting against the national interests of the country, because it is exactly due to those critical reports or negative reports, as they were saying, about countries' developments that prevent us from making advance on the European Union affairs, which obviously has nothing to do with the reality. Facing the truth is not what is preventing us. Problem is why that truth is as ugly as it is right now, that we are not doing the reforms required from us. So then there was another wave of attacks against another group of NGOs who are working on freedom of religion and equality issues. That they are fighting against the Orthodox Church of Georgia, which is like the traditional majority religion in the country, about 75% or 78 or whatever percent of Georgians. I mean, the population of Georgia are Orthodox Christians, and it is used as the as this big tool in the hands of all governments in the country to harass and manipulate with the public opinion whenever you ask the transparency of the state funds that goes to the church. Then immediately you get the label of fighting against the church and fighting against the patriarch and all of that. So then, and then in January, mid of January, we had this big visit to PRC by the ruling party. That's actually very first time after 35 years of independence of Georgia that our ruling party, any ruling party that ever existed in Georgia, made a party visit to another country. We never had that. It's like the first time. We never had it that from the ruling party. We were doing it, lots of opposition parties were doing it, particularly liberal parties, but not the ruling party. And that's for the first time. And where do they go? Visiting Chinese Communist Party. And of course, there was lots of talk about it. All media got interested. And as soon as anything is about the China, everybody just jumps to our office and with all the questions. And we were all over, like every single media channel in the country, being it online media or traditional media outlets, were just had us, me or my colleagues from the Civic Idea, on talk shows or news programs. And yeah, they've got angry because the guy who was leading the delegation from the parliament at that time, in a week became prime minister of the country. We did not know he was becoming a prime minister. Well, it did not matter, but they knew, so they could not bear that much of a criticism of someone who was next week literally becoming a prime minister. We even made a joke that he went to Beijing to get the blessing from the Beijing on becoming the prime minister. And then it started, and it never ended. And we are at the end of March now, which is like 2 months after it. And every day, almost every day, there is another piece of news story about us, how we are spying in the interests of Taiwan, against the strategic interests of Georgia and worsening Sino-Georgia relationships, and that and by that fighting the prospects of prosperity and development of the country. But the worst part of it is that if for all this time it was part of state propaganda, and you would have lots of different lies spread on news channels and all the stories invented, this time they went too deep, because they've started official investigation against my organization. I don't know if it is personally against me or not, but definitely against the organization. We have an anti-corruption bureau in a country which is part of the European reform deal to have governments kept accountable. And now the Anti-Corruption Bureau is investigating case of an NGO on the charges of bringing illegal money to Georgia from unrecognized state of Taiwan. Legally speaking, there is no case, because legally speaking, there is no prohibition or problem in relations with Taiwan. We have trade with Taiwan. We have investments from Taiwan. We have absolutely normal relations as a country. Georgia as a country has absolutely normal relations with Taiwan, as well as with any other entity or state or city, because, you know, there are all kinds of different cooperation agreements between states or cities or regions or whatever you call it. And that's why I'm not worried that there is any chance for this case to continue. But of course, they are using it as a as one intimidation tool, basically to constantly keep you busy with this, and it's also a very good distracting instrument for them, because at the end of January, what I can say for sure, for 2 weeks, the whole office was completely out of business, because all we were doing, we were standing in front of the copying machines and copying all sorts of financial documents for 7 years that they've kept requesting from us. And like, literally speaking, all people who are full-time in the office were doing that. Somebody was searching for those documents, somebody was systematizing, somebody was copying, and you know. But at the same time, obviously, the bigger goal they have at this moment is that we are facing elections in October, very critical, very determinant elections for the future, for at least next 5-10 years for the country. And their goal is to discredit as much as they can and as much as public believes them, to discredit all those groups who first will be monitoring and are listened and heard outside Georgia about the elections. So they want to delegitimize any message we might carry during the electoral campaign, as well as during or after the elections. And two, if they can, by some legal means, deprive us the right of monitoring elections. For example, in our case, I think where this so-called investigation is going to go is that they're going to give us in a law about the political parties in Georgia, we have this notion of a related person. So there are political parties and then there are related persons. And if you have that status, then you cannot be independent player in a game anymore. So you cannot get registration with the Central Electoral Commission and you cannot monitor elections. My husband is leader of one of the opposition parties. And now that's what they are trying. They are trying to establish that connection in a business way, that as an organization we are tied up with this political party. And then if they issue that statement, then they will refer it to the Central Electoral Commission not to have us registered as a monitoring organization, which is a pure formality, obviously. I mean, I don't need a registration to listen and watch and monitor the electoral process, but obviously they will use it as a delegitimizing tool for all the statements that might come up as part of that election.
And you touched briefly on the PRC's engagement in Georgia. Maybe you could say a word about your perception of why you've received so much pressure that seems to come from your transparency and related work associated with China.
Yeah, I think that there are a number of reasons. One, obviously, is very, very much related to the government, because we don't talk abstractly about the issues. We talk with concrete facts. And obviously, they get very annoyed every time when they are facing those facts. And plus to that, different from some other groups in the country, media likes us. So whatever we do, whatever we produce, whatever we write, it always gets media attention, which means that then people are hearing it and it kind of resonates with the public. That's why they are all the statements that Speaker of Parliament started in January, Prime Minister joining, all the ministers, all the heads of committees in Parliament were about it. They were actually openly saying that she is creating wrong opinions in a country, and that's it goes against the national interests of the country, and that's why we need to act on it in order to prevent the damaging results out of their work, whatever it means. I don't really know what it means, how they're going to prevent it, but still. So that's one reason, that they are really worried about the level of disclosure of the manipulation on their side, lies that they are trying to spread about Georgia PRC, rising cooperation, which is non-existent, and all of that. Second reason is obviously very personal, because every time we establish elite capture cases, concrete officials, concrete people, one of them, our former prime minister, currently the chair of the ruling party, obviously, then it hurts them even more, and they feel obliged to do something about it, and particularly the not as much leadership as rest of it, because they need to prove their loyalty to the leader. So then they start to act on it. And thirdly, but predominantly, I think that's the main reason why they got so active after the last summer against us, is that we have a new Chinese ambassador who is a very active guy, different from the previous one. He talks to media, previous one never did. He does conferences. He established cooperation with some think tanks in a country and is using that platform and that venue to spread the his version of the Sino-Georgian cooperation. And sometimes or most of the time, things that they say are not true. They are simple lies. And then we are reacting on that as well. So I'm absolutely sure, obviously, I have no evidence of it, but I'm pretty sure that Georgian government was told, pressed by the Chinese embassy in the country to make sure that we don't talk that much, and that even if we talk, then they make sure that whatever we say is delegitimized. This is why this line that whatever we say doesn't matter because we work for Taiwanese government was there, because that's how they are now trying to portray everything that we do. So it's not that we are concerned with the transparency or accountability of the government and public spending and all of that. No, it all happens only because Taiwanese government, we are lobbying on behalf of the Taiwanese government, and that's what the whole thing is all about, and not about democracy or accountability or transparency.
And the pressure you're describing in the Georgian case, and Civic Idea has done important work mapping this and explaining it in a wider context, is really consistent with what one sees in other parts of the world where China is engaging often in ways that look to suppress certain aspects of debate or reshape agendas, and ultimately draining or suppressing pluralism where they go. And I think what you're describing is quite consistent with that. I might ask you, just in a slightly wider lens perspective, Georgia is a country now, I think the Baltic states are in this category, there are a few others, that are obliged to deal with several large authoritarian powers that are feeling much more ambitious in present environment. I don't think this was true 25 years ago,
yes.
Even maybe 10 or 15 years ago. But today, there's the longstanding challenge that Russia has presented to Georgia that you described earlier in our conversation. And now China's there as well. So I just wonder if you could share your reflections on how a small country, how large is Georgia?
4.2 million. Statistics says, although I think it's much less now, unfortunately.
In a tough geographical neighborhood, how you see this challenge of dealing with and navigating the pressure and influence exerted by two globally powerful authoritarian regimes?
Yeah, you're right. Like, not only 30 years ago, but 10 years ago exactly, we were still talking only about one power, which was constantly there without invitation. But with the shrinking Russian space or shrinking power of Russia over its neighbors, China is moving in and filling every gap that is left by Russia. In all countries of South Caucasus and Central Asia, from Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan to Georgia and Armenia. And it's a fact. And unfortunately, we as countries all together, government, non-governmental sector, are kind of late on that. And we took it by surprise, this dominant presence of China in so many different fields of life, from academia to media, and obviously in more and more in economy, and basically taking over lots of space that was before that occupied by Russia or was left free after Russia was gone. But there is one thing about being a small state that makes it a little bit easier than or maybe I don't know how it works with bigger states because I've never been part of a big state. But with a small state, if you are on a strong and clear if as a nation you are built on strong and clear values and you are determined your future holistically, comprehensively, you know exactly what is it where you seek the shelter or where you seek your future or what is it that you want to achieve in your life, then it's much easier to fight whatever influences are coming from the outside, whether it's from big powers or small powers. The good thing about Georgia is what's in the Soviet Union. Every other nation was making jokes about Georgians, that even at that time, the capital city of Georgia, Tbilisi, was called Little Paris of Georgia and of Soviet Union. And Georgia as a whole was called Little Italy of the Soviet Union. Why? Because we like to wear Chanel and have Mercedes driven, and we are very much, I'm not saying this in as a bad thing. I'm saying it as a European value kind of a thing. Another thing was that when Soviet Union broke up, there was this thing that all the countries were deciding for themselves. Lots of things, right? Where you belong, which association you go to, which part of, I don't know, which trade organization you join. And one of them was Football Federation. We had a choice to join Asian Football Federation or European Football Federation. There never was the question. We knew at that time Georgia had a very strong football teams. And at that time we knew if we were joining Asia Federation, we had lots of chances there of competing on high levels. And if we were in European Championship, not really. But we still chose European Championship because this is where we belong. This is how we feel, what we determined for ourselves many, many centuries ago. That's what holds Georgia strong still, regardless of all the pressures coming from everywhere. And this is actually why this fight against foreign agents law was so quick and so successfully quick, that we immediately, when it touches that nerve that is going to get us back to the Russian space, then that's it. Nobody cares who stands next to me on the demonstration. It doesn't matter because we have the same home to be saved from all sorts of dictatorial or authoritarian influences. But we have our weaknesses, obviously. And when it comes to normal life, when, you know, you need to pay taxes, you need to pick up your own garbage, every day you need to do this regular, boring stuff, we don't like doing that. And without that, there is no state. And this is why we are in this constant transition from somewhere to somewhere. And we never managed to have actually a strong institutions-based and rule of law-based state. But I think that's something very dramatically important happened last year, and that's not Georgia, Sino-Georgian strategic agreement, which was signed last year, but that is the granting of European candidate status to Georgia in mid-December 2023. And now that's our beacon. That's what drives us to wake up every morning, remember that, okay, this chance is there, actually, and let's work for it. And I don't think at the end of the day, either China or Russia they have a game in Georgia, but they do not have a chance to take it over. And we will be European democracy, and we will go back to normal when we were strong partners of the U.S., when we were reliable partners of NATO. That will happen, but we have elections to win.
And so maybe on that positive note, maybe if you just want to say a word about what you feel is most important to help Georgia maintain its democratic aspirations and what sort of vigilance is required from you and your colleagues and fellow countrymen and what sort of support is most valuable from the outside world on that count.
Yeah, I think that's to keep that civic space alive. That's the most important help, support we can have. Because, yes, the space is shrinking for freedoms generally in the country. It's going to get really ugly before October. As close we get to the elections, it's going to be more and more difficult. And it's very important to feel that you are not alone. that's kind of support that we need. And actually, this is what helped also during this fight last year, because everybody immediately, the whole world stood with the Georgian society who was on the streets demonstrating against the law. There was even this joke that even Switzerland made a statement. Yeah, they officially issued a statement. Swiss government issued a statement in support of the Georgian public. And I was telling to a fantastic Swiss ambassador that we have in Georgia that probably nobody's statement worked as well as Swiss statement did. Not the American, not the White House, not the Brussels, but when Swiss government made the statement, everybody was like, come on, something really bad is happening, because even Swiss are reacting. So that's kind of support you need, you know, because when you are in this trouble, when you are constantly feeling abused, attacked, when there are all these smearing campaigns going on. Yeah, I mean, we are all human beings and it affects us. But then you know that you are not alone in this world and there are people who are ready to stand with you and give you that space to continue your work. Then it's very easy. Lots of people say, for example, we hear on different events, people complaining that, for example, there are lots of media organizations who exist, independent media organizations who exist only because of the donor support, right? But then there is always this complaint that we don't have enough resources because we do like 2 programs and then government and propaganda does 20 and doesn't matter. I don't believe in that. Because I believe in quality and in the power of persuasion. Is it that word? Because it's not about the numbers. It's not about who does what, how many programs, who does 10 or who does 2. It's what you say. And I believe in the power of truth. And I think it's very easy to win when you are on the right side of the history. But in order to stay on... we will be on the right side of history, but in order to have your word out, you do need that support, because, and that's not big, that's not huge, that's not like something unimaginable, just the air to breathe, and then we can do it. We've done it many times and we will do it again.
And I think that's a great note to conclude on. And it's really been a pleasure chatting with you, Tinatin. And Georgia will continue to fight for its independent course, and I have no doubt it will succeed. That concludes this episode of the Power 3.0 podcast, which is brought to you by the International Forum for Democratic Studies at the National Endowment for Democracy. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please leave us 5 stars and a comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast app you use. For more information on these issues, check out our companion blog, Power 3.0, Understanding Modern Authoritarian Influence, and additional resources on the NED website at www.ned.org/ideas. And join the conversation with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, where you can find us at Think Democracy. Special thanks to our podcast production team at the International Forum, especially producer Amaris Rancy and sound engineer Aina Yukawa. We hope you enjoyed the episode and we'll tune in again next time.